I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of the PBS series Frontline, and this is a special update episode of the Frontline Dispatch. If you haven't already listened to our series, Living with Murder, I'd recommend listening to that first.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation Journalism Initiative, committed to excellence.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler.
Support for Frontline Dispatch comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing compassionate care and cancer specialists who are experienced in the cancer you have. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
Reporter Samantha Brown and juvenile lifer Kempis Songster stopped recording their conversations just over a year ago, but they remained in touch. A lot has happened since. More than 1,000 juvenile lifers across the country have been resentenced, including Kempis. After serving 30 years of his life sentence, he left Greaterford Prison on December 28, 2017, on lifetime parole. That means he will now be overseen by the criminal justice system for the rest of his life. He now lives in Philadelphia. He's working, he is married, and just a few weeks ago, he became a father.
I think they opened my cell at about 4 in the morning. And I walked out of the prison doors at 7 a.m. in the morning. And so I walked across the parking lot. I was set free. And I remember one of the questions that I was asked by a reporter was, how do I feel? And I said, I don't know how to feel because I'm shocked that I'm walking in a straight line for so long. Because usually I would have had to turn around by now because we only have a circle to walk in. But the fact that I was still walking straight after about maybe 100 yards,
yeah,
or 200 yards and 300 yards was like, my body didn't know how to take that, being able to walk straight without having to turn.
And what did that feel like?
Vocabulary, English vocabulary, just seems so inadequate to express these cellular feelings, you know, because that's how I felt it. I felt it on a cellular level, like this great weight was just lifted off me. I felt new. I felt brand new. And it lifted a weight off me, the weight of inadequacy. Of course, the guilt never goes anywhere because the facts are the facts.
That makes sense to me. It's like being seen differently and allowing yourself to see yourself differently. It's like being given permission to be something more than what you had been for 30 years, or it's acknowledging that you are more than what you were.
Yeah, and I like the word you use, permission. I will say that being given permission to see myself differently means a lot. You know, for the parole board and for people in society to say, hey man, it's okay for you to begin to see yourself as a member of the human family again. You know, for the people to give me license to do that. You know, and it makes me feel so renewed and so blessed and grateful and humble.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm most happy to be experiencing out here is in the wide open world is the sense of astonishment at simple things and every little thing. Like everything is just so amazing to me, the simplest things.
Like what? What's an example?
Like children going to school, coming from school with their book bags on and just, you know, ramping and playing and just the sounds of their voices, you know, traffic, people walking their dogs, the sound of trees when the wind blows and the leaves whisper. It's just all of these things I'm just so amazed at.
The journalism behind the Frontline Dispatch is possible thanks to the support of you, our listeners. Join us in supporting journalism that holds our leaders accountable and pursues the truth, wherever it may lead, by making a gift at frontline.org/dispatch. Thank you.
It's been a huge year for you. You're working, you're married, you have a baby. I'm wondering in the day to day, like, how much is it on your mind about staying out of trouble, of being careful in the world?
Every day it weighs on me. You know, every time I step out of the house, I'm not driving because I don't want to be pulled over for any reason. The risk of driving while black, in some cases walking while black, is I'm very, very conscious of it. If I was driving and I got pulled over by an officer, I wonder if they was to see that I'm on a lifetime parole. And that's it. Lifetime parole is a big deal. Would they want to just be hard on me?
Yeah.
You know, and send me back? Or if I get in any kind of situations with anybody, it's going to be more consequential for me than the next person. And so I'm not really in any rush to drive. You know what I mean?
What are some of the things that you do to be careful?
When I go out and I protest, I do go out, I protest, I rally, you know, engaging in my, you know, my civic duties and social responsibilities. But when things get a little testy and people start getting arrested, I have to start like looking for ways to extricate myself, to like fade out of that situation. Because with me, I'm not going to get released in a couple of hours or later on that day. No, I'm going back, all the way back.
I know one of the most profound moments for me when we talked is when you shared a fear of yours about getting out of prison and that you might be walking down the street one day and someone would cry out murderer, that they would know who you were and what you had done. And I'm wondering if anything like that has happened, or I guess something to a lesser degree, which might be meeting people who tell you to your face that they don't think you deserve a second chance, that juvenile lifers should be serving a life sentence.
I don't know if I was, it was one of my fears that it would happen. I don't know if I would use that word, because I'm not really fearful that it would happen. In fact, I expect it to happen. I think in a lot of ways I deserve it to happen. But I did experience something like that. A few weeks after I came out, I was asked to testify before the city council, the Philadelphia City Council. I was told that I would be testifying about trauma, how being victimized can lead to one victimizing others. When I got there, it was not what I thought it was. The room was filled with families of people who were murdered, families of victims. And I seen all these weeping people, and someone came up to me, someone that I knew. And she said, wow, they have you on the list as a family of a victim. What could I possibly say in this room full of people whose wounds were gaping and fresh and gushing? And here I am, someone who committed an act like that, had committed a homicide, is sitting in this room full of people. What can I possibly say? You know, and I wanted to just shrink. I wanted to shrink and ease my way out of the room. I just got up there and then I testified about my life and about what I had done and how much I want to contribute to changing things and how I think we can change things.
Yeah. I know a lot of what you're doing now is sharing your story and talking about what happened and what led you to do what you did and what being in prison for 30 years was like. And I'm wondering if it's gotten any easier to tell your story.
No. Every day it gets harder because every day I become more conscious, more sensitive, more mature. Can you imagine how hard it is for me to talk about it now that I have a son? You know, I'm a father. I'm a father. You think I want my son to know this about his father when he gets old enough to know it? And how do I have this conversation with my son? Because he's going to find out. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I look at my child every day, you know, and I just marvel at this being, this pure little tiny being. He's only 7 pounds. And the future, the infinite potential, the vast landscape of possibilities that exists for him. It's the greatest blessing, no doubt, and gift, but the most tremendous responsibility. You know, and I can't imagine that at any point in Karume's growth, it being arrested some kind of way, you know, before he has a chance to live out whatever his purpose on earth is.
Yeah. I have one last question, Kempis, which has to do with you and me. You know, we talked for a lot of hours when we were recording for Living with Murder, and I was in a position of being both a journalist and being the daughter of a victim of a violent crime. And that made me a lot more vulnerable in our conversations. And I found I had to walk a difficult line where I was asking you hard questions, where I was sharing a lot of stuff with you that I wouldn't have if my mother hadn't been the victim of a violent crime. I'm wondering what that experience was like for you.
What I've learned, Sam, from having that conversation with you that I would think amounted to 35 hours of conversation. And that's a lot considering the 15-minute time restrictions on the phone calls.
Yeah.
Even though you and I are on so far extremes, you know, of the spectrum of violence, me as someone who've caused it, and in the most irreparable way, and you have someone who've suffered it, you know, and connected to someone who suffered it, your mother, the woman that gave you life,
yeah,
you know, for 35 hours, almost a whole year, you know, that we talked. But what I've learned from that conversation is that there's a lot of strength and power and vulnerability.
This story was produced by Samantha Brown and Jay Allison in collaboration with the public radio website Transom.org. For PBS's Frontline, the story was produced by Sophie McKibben. Sophie is our series producer. Jeb Sharp is our podcast editor and producer. Gabrielle Burbe is our production assistant. And Jay Allison is our creative advisor. Jay also mixed this episode. Andrew Metz is our managing editor. Lauren Azell Kinlaw is our senior story editor. Amy Gaines is our series coordinating producer. And our special counsel is Dale Cohen. Music in this episode comes from Cellwagon Symphonette. The Frontline Dispatch is produced in WGBH's studios in Boston and powered by PRX. I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of the PBS investigative series Frontline, and I hope you'll keep listening to the Frontline Dispatch. If you want more stories like this one, subscribe at frontlinedispatch.org or wherever you get your podcasts.